Muse, tell me the things done by golden Aphrodite, the one from Cyprus who arouses sweet desire for gods, and who subdues the populations of mortal humans, and birds as well, who fly in the sky as well as beasts, all those that grow on both dry land and the sea. They all know the things done by the one with the beautiful garlands, the one from Cythera. But there are three whose minds she cannot win over or deceive. The first is the daughter of Aegis-bearing Zeus, bright-eyed Athena. For she takes no pleasure in the things done by golden Aphrodite. What does please her is wars, and what is done by Ares. Battles and fighting, as well as the preparation of splendid pieces of craftsmanship. For she is the first to teach mortal humans to be craftsmen, in making war chariots and other things on wheels, decorated with bronze. And it is she who teaches maidens tender of skin, inside the palaces, the skill of making splendid pieces of craftsmanship, putting it firmly into each one's mind. The second is the renowned Artemis, she of the golden shafts. Never has she been subdued in lovemaking by Aphrodite, lover of smiles. For she takes pleasure in the bow and arrow, and the killing of wild beasts in the mountains, as well as lyres, groups of singing dancers, and high-pitched shouts of celebration. Also shade of groves and the city of Dicaeoe men. The third one not to take pleasure in the things done by Aphrodite is the young maiden full of Eidos, Hestia, who was the firstborn child of Cronos, the one with the crooked Metis, as well as the last and youngest, through the will of Zeus, holder of the Aegis. She was the lady who was wooed by Poseidon and Apollo, but she was quite unwilling and she firmly refused. She had sworn a great oath, and what she said became what really happened. She swore, as she touched the head of her father Zeus, the Aegis bearer, that she would be a virgin for all days to come, that illustrious goddess. And to her father Zeus gave a beautiful honor as a compensating substitute for marriage. She is seated in the middle of the house, getting the richest portion, and in all the temples of the gods she has a share in the time. Among all mortals, she is the senior goddess. And there are three goddesses that she, Aphrodite, could not persuade in their minds. As for all the rest, there is nothing that has escaped Aphrodite, none of the blessed gods, nor any of the mortal humans. She even led astray the noose of Zeus, the one who delights in the thunder, the one who is the very greatest, and the one who is the very greatest time as his share. But even his well-formed mind are deceived by her whenever she wants, as she mates him with mortal women with the greatest of ease, unbeknownst to Hera, his sister and wife, who is the best among all the immortal goddesses in her great beauty. She was the most glorious female to be born to Cronos, the one with the crooked Metis, and to her mother Rhea, and Zeus, the one whose resources are inexhaustible, made her his honorable wife, one who knows the ways of affection. But even upon Aphrodite, Zeus put sweet desire in her two most desires to make love to a mortal man, so that not even she may go without mortal lovemaking and get a chance to gloat at all the other gods with her sweet laughter. Aphrodite, lover of smiles, boasting that she can make the gods sleep with mortal women who then bear mortal sons to immortal fathers, and how she can make the goddesses sleep with mortal men. And so Zeus put sweet desire in her two most desire for Anchises. At that time, he was herding cattle at the steep peaks of Mount Ida, famous for its many springs. To look at him in the way he was shaped was like looking at the immortals. When Aphrodite lover Smile saw him, she fell in love with him. A terrible desire seized her in her mind. She went to Cyprus, entering her temple, fragrant with incense, to Paphos. This is where her sacred precinct is and her altar, fragrant with incense. She went in and closed the shining doors. Then the graces bathed her and anointed her with oil, the kind that gives immortality, glistening on the complexion of the gods, who last for all time. Immortal it was, giver of pleasures, and it had the fragrance incense. Then she wrapped all her beautiful clothes around her skin. She was decked out in gold, Aphrodite, lover of smiles. She rushed towards Troy, leaving behind fragrant Cyprus, making her way with the greatest ease, high up among the clouds. She arrived at Mount Ida, famous for its many springs, nurturing mother of beasts. She went straight for the herdsman's homestead, up over the mountain. Following her came gray wolves and lions with fierce looks fawning on her, bears too, and nimble leopards, who could not have their fill of devouring deer, came along. Seeing them, she was delighted in her tumults inside her mind, and she put desire where their hearts were. So they all went off in pairs and slept together in shaded nooks. She, in the meantime, came to the well-built shelters and found him, left all alone in the herdsman's homestead, and the hero Anchises, who had the beauty of the gods. All the others went after the herds along grassy pastures, while he was left all alone at the herdsman's homestead, pacing back and forth, playing tunes on his lyre that pierced the inside. She stood before him, the daughter of Zeus, Aphrodite, looking like an unwed maiden in size, of length, and appearance. She did not want him to notice her with his eyes and be frightened of her. When Anchises saw her, he was filled with wonder as he took note of her appearance and the size of length and splendid clothes, for she wore a robe that was more resplendent than the brightness of fire. She had twisted brooches and shiny earrings of the shape of flowers. Around her tender throat were the most beautiful necklaces. It was a thing of beauty, golden, decorated with every sort of design. Like the moon, it glowed around her tender breasts, a marvel to behold. Seized with love, Anchises said to her, "Hail, my lady, you have come to this home, whichever the blessed ones you are, Artemis or Leto or golden Aphrodite or Themis of noble birth or bright-eyed Athena, or perhaps you are one of the graces, you who have come here. They are the ones who keep company with all the gods and are called immortal. Or you are one of those nymphs who range over beautiful groves, or one of those nymphs who inhabit this beautiful mountain and the fountainhead of rivers and grassy meadows. For you, on some high peak in a spore with a view going all around, I will set up an altar, and I will perform for you beautiful sacrifices every year as the season comes around. And I wish that you in turn may have a kindly disposed Thumos towards me. Grant that I become a man who is distinguished among the Trojans. Make the genealogy that comes after me a flourishing one, and make me live a very long life and see the light of the sun, blessed in the midst of the people. And let me arrive at the threshold of old age." Then Aphrodite, daughter of Zeus, answered him, "Anchises, most glorious of earthborn men, I am no goddess. Why do you liken me to the female immortals? No, I am a mortal. The mother that bore me was a woman. My father is Oreus, famed for his name. Maybe you have heard of him. He rules over all of Phrygia with its strong walled fortresses. But I know your language as well as my own. The nursemaid who brought me up in the palace was a Trojan. Ever since I was a small child, she brought me up, having taken me from my mother. That is Why, I know your language as well as my own. But then, the one with the golden wand, the Argos killer, abducted me, taking me from a festival of song and dance in the honor of Artemis, the one with the golden arrows. There were many of us nymphs there, maidens worth many cattle as bride price. We were having a good time, and a crowd so large that you couldn't count them was standing around us in a circle. Then it was that the one with the golden wand, the Argos killer, abducted me. He carried me over many fields of mortal humans and over vast stretches of land, unclaimed and unsettled, where wild beasts eat our raw flesh from about and in and out of their shaded lairs. I thought that my feet would never again touch the earth, grower of grain, and he said that I, in your bed, the bed of Anchises, would be called your lawfully wedded wife, and that I would give you splendid children. But once he pointed this out and made note of it, straight away he went back, that powerful Argos killer, to that separate group, the immortals. I, in the meantime, reached you here, and there is an overpowering compulsion that I have in me. In the name of Zeus, in the name of your parents, I appeal to you. As I touch your knees, your parents must be noble, for base ones could never have conceived such a one as you. Take me, virgin that I am, and experienced in making love, and show me to your father and your caring mother, and to your brothers, those born from the same parents. I will not be an unseemly in-law for them, but a seemly one indeed. And send a messenger quickly to the Phrygians, trainers of swift horses, to tell my father and my mother, however much she grieves. They will send you plenty of gold and woven clothing as well. Take these abundant and splendid things as dowry. After you have done so, prepare a lovely wedding feast that gives time to both humans and immortals. After she said these things, she put sweet desire in his thumos, and Anchises was seized with love. He said these words, calling out to her, "If you are mortal, and if a woman was the mother who gave birth to you, and if Otreus is your father, famed for his name as you say he is, and if you have come here because of the immortal conductor, Hermes, and if you are called, and if you are to be called my wife for all days to come, then it is impossible for any god or any mortal human to hold me back right here from joining you and making love right now on the spot. Not even if the one who shoots from afar, Apollo himself, takes aim from his silver bow and shoots his arrow that brings misery. Then, a lady who looks like the gods, I would willingly, once I have been in your bed, go down into the place of Hades below." So saying, he took her by the hand, and Aphrodite, lover of smiles, went along. With her face turned away and her eyes downcast towards the bed, all nicely made, which had already been arranged for the Lord, all nicely made with soft covers and on top lay skins of bears and lions who roar with their deep voices, which he himself had killed on the lofty mountains. And when they went up into the sturdy bed, he first took off the jewelry shining on the surface of her body, the twisted brooches and the shiny earrings in the shape of flowers. Then he undid her waistband and resplendent garments. He stripped them off and put them on a silver-studded stool, and Anchises did. And then, by the will of the gods and by fate, he lay next to the immortal female, mortal male that he was. He He did not know what he was really doing. But when the time comes for herdsmen to drive back to the fold their cattle and sturdy sheep, back from flowery pastures, then it was that she poured sweet sleep over Anchise, sweet and pleasurable. She, in the meantime, put back on her beautiful clothes, which covered again the surface of her body. Now that her skin was again beautifully covered over, the resplendent goddess stood by the bed. And the well-built roof beam, her head reached that high up, and beauty shone forth from her cheeks, an immortal beauty, the kind marks the one with the beautiful garlands, the goddess from Cythera. Then she woke him from his sleep and called out to him, saying, "Rise up, son of Dardanos, why do you sleep such a sleep without awakening? See if I look like what you noticed when you first saw me with your eyes." As soon as he saw the neck and beautiful eyes of Aphrodite, he was filled with fright, and he turned his eyes away in another direction. Then he hid his beautiful face with a cloak, and praying to her, addressed her with winged words, "The first time I ever laid eyes on you, goddess, I knew you were a god, but you did not speak to me accurately. Now I appeal to you by touching your knees in the name of Zeus, the holder of the Aegis. Don't let me become disabled. Don't let me live on like that among humans. Please take pity. I know that no man is full of life able if he sleeps with an immortal goddess." He was answered by the daughter of Zeus, Aphrodite, Anchises, most glorious of mortal humans. "Take heart and do not be too afraid in your mind. You should have no fear of that I would do any kind of bad thing to you, or that any of the other blessed ones would do. For you are Phylos indeed to the gods, and you will have Phylos' son, who will be king among the Trojans, and following him will generations after generations for all time to come. His name will be Aeneas, since it was an unspeakable that took hold of me grief that I had fallen into the bed of a mortal man." "And yet, of all mortal humans, the closest to the gods by far are those who come from your family line, both in looks and in constitution. Why, there was golden-haired Ganymede, whom Zeus, the master of Metis, abducted on account of his beauty, so that he may be together with the immortal ones as wine pourer for the gods in the palace of Zeus, a wonder to behold, given his share of time by all the immortals pouring red nectar from a golden mixing bowl. Tros was gripped by his mind by a penthos that is beyond forgetting. He did not know where the miraculous gust of wind took his son, abducting him. He mourned him without pause for all days, and Zeus took pity on him. He gave him compensation for his son, a set of high-stepping horses whom the gods use for their travels. These horses he gave Amar a gift to keep, and Atreus was told all the details of what happened at the behest of Zeus by the Argos killer, the conductor. He was told that Ganymede would be immortal and ageless, just like the gods. And when Atreus heard the message of Zeus, he no longer lamented, but was happy with his mind and merrily he did ride along in a chariot drawn by horses with feet as swift as a gust of wind. In much the same way did Thanos, abducted by Eos, she of the golden powder weave. He too belonged to your family line, looking like the immortal ones. And then she went with a request to the son of Cronos, him of the dark clouds, asking that Tithonos become immortal and live for all days to come. Zeus nodded yes to her and brought to fulfillment the words of her wish. Too bad that her thinking was disconnected. The Lady Eos did not notice in her mind that she should have had a lesson in a stripping away of painful old age. Well, for a while, Tithonus held on to adolescence, enjoying Eos, the one with the gold patterned weave, the one yearly born. He lived at the stream of the Okeanos and at the ends of the earth. But when the first strands of gray hair started growing from his beautiful head and his noble chin, then the Lady Eos stopped coming to his bed. But she nourished him, keeping her in her palace with grain and ambrosia, and she gave him beautiful clothes. But when hateful old age was pressing hard on him with all its might, and he couldn't move his limbs, much less lift them up, then in her thumo she thought up this plan, a very good one indeed. She put him in her chamber and closed the shining doors over him. From there his voice pours out, it seems never to end, and he has no strength at all, the kind he used to have in his limbs when they could still bend. I would not choose that you and Kizis be that way amongst the immortal ones, immortal and living for all days to come. If you could only stay the way you are in looks and constitution, staying alive as my lawfully wedded husband, then Akos would not have to envelop me in my sturdy furnace, but now wretched old age will envelop you piteously, just as it catches up with every man. It is baneful, it wears you down, and even the gods shrink back from it. As for me, I will have great disgrace in the eyes of the immortal ones, a disgrace that will last for all days to come without end, all on account of you, my Tristan stratagems, with which I used to get all immortal gods mated with mortal women, used to be feared by them. For my power of noose used to subdue all of them. But now, my mouth can never boast about this among the immortals. I have gone very far off the track in a wretched and inexcusable way. I have strayed from my noose. I got myself a child beneath my waistband, having slept with a male mortal, and as for him, the moment he sees in the light of sun, nymphs, and living in the mountains and wearing loathsome waistbands will raise him. Nymphs that live in this great and fertile mountain, they associate neither with mortals nor immortals. They live for a long time, and they eat immortal food. They put on a beautiful song and dance even by the standards of the immortals. They mate with Selenoi, or with the sharp-sighted Argos killer, making love in the recesses of lovely caves. When they are born, firs and oaks with lofty boughs spring out from earth, that nurturer of men. Beautiful trees flourishing on high mountains, they stand there pointing to the sky, and people call them the sacred places of the immortal ones. Mortals may not cut them down with iron, but when the fate of death is at hand for them, these beautiful trees become dry to start with, and then their bark wastes away, and then the branches drop off, and at the same time, the swishki comes out of them as it leaves the light of the sun. The nymphs will raise my son, keeping him in their company. And when adolescence, full of loveliness, first takes hold of him, the goddesses will take him here to you and show you a child as for you, in order that I may tell you in the proper order everything that I have been, my friendies. I too will come back to you as the fifth anniversary approaches. I'm bringing you your son. And the moment you see this young seedling with your eyes, you will be happy to look at him, for he will be very godlike, and straight away you will take him to the windy Ilion. And if any mortal human asks you what mother brought your father's son beneath her waistband, keep in mind to tell them as I command you, say that he's the offspring of the flower face nymphs who live on this beautiful mountain shaded over by forests. But if you say out loud and boast with the Thumal Sparest of Phrenes that you made love to the Lady of Cythera, the one with the beautiful garlands, then Zeus, in his anger, will smite you with a smoking thunderbolt. Now then, everything has been said to you. You take note in your mind, and refrain from naming me. Avoid the mementos of the gods. So saying, she bolted away. Tordo, in the sky, I wish you graces, goddess, you who will over beautifully colonize Cyprus. Having started with you, I will now go on to the rest of my performance. Thank you, Lady Aphrodite, please, 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 I finish, Lady Aphrodite, please let me come. Please, please, please. Please, 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 please. Lady Aphrodite, please. Fuck. Please, 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 Lady Aphrodite, please, please, please.